So excuse me, mister, but I'm a mister too, and you're giving mister a bad name, mister like you. So I'm taking the mister from out in front of your name, cause it's mister like you that puts the rest of us to shame. It's a mister like.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ed Kilgore, the principal writer at the Washington Monthly's Political Animal blog. He is also the managing editor of The Democratic Strategist, an online forum, and a senior fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute. He was formerly vice president for policy and democratic leadership at the Democratic Leadership Council, communications director for U.S. Senator Sam Nunn, and a federal state relations staffer for three governors of Georgia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ed Kilgore.
Thank you, Ian.
And the stage tonight in Tampa at the Republican convention's opening night, of course, it's their rival for media attention is a hurricane, Isaac. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, one of the things I find interesting about the lineup is how few representatives of the United States Congress are there. There is an African-American young woman from Utah that they're featuring, but given that Paul Ryan is on the ticket, is there a possibility that they don't want to advertise the world's least popular Congress?
Well, that's probably true. They're also sort of pretending this is an outsider ticket because it's headed by a former governor, even though he doesn't like to talk about being governor. So, you know, by and large, with approval ratings of Congress, and particularly Republicans in Congress, being historic lows, no, they're probably not real crazy about identifying the party with that particular crowd.
And what do you think?
But they're not a very diverse bunch either.
Right. Well, that's, I think, obviously why this African-American congresswoman is being given the stage.
Yeah, that and, you know, the apostate Arthur Davis, a former Democratic congressman who was once very close to Barack Obama, who's now, after a fairly bitter primary defeat running for governor of Alabama, has suddenly decided he wants to be a Republican. So he's going to be featured, too. He's sort of the Zell Miller of this convention.
And then you've got Ted Cruz, who just won in Texas. Do you think having Ted Cruz and having the African-American congresspeople and the potential governor on is going to do the trick in terms of winning over minorities?
No. No, I mean, they have to make a show of diversity, such as it is. That's a tradition. But, if there's anything that's pretty clear about this particular Republican ticket is they're doubling, maybe tripling down on getting as large a percentage of the white vote as possible and are just, you know, pretty much doomed to a very poor performance among both Hispanics, African-Americans, and even Asians. So, yeah, they'll say they're diverse. It makes them feel good, but this is not a Republican ticket that's in the outreach of any sort.
So, but is it a winning ticket, Ed Kilgore? Can you win with white votes alone? I mean, he's clearly been throwing bones to the angry white men. Or this advertising campaign that completely lies about the waivers on welfare,
yeah,
which is designed to make, you know, blue-collar Reagan Democrats angry, thinking that the bunch of minority freeloaders are getting their money. And then throwing a bone with this remark about the birthers, the reference to him not having, nobody ever asking for Mitt Romney's birth certificate, all seems to indicate to me that that's one who he's going after, but it's also the fact that he seems to be shoring up this base would indicate to me that they're behind in there, aren't they, in what you'd normally be doing at this point, be reaching out to the center.
Well, there hasn't been much reaching out to the center from the very beginning, and that's in no small part because, well, two reasons. One, there's a pretty small undecided vote this year. And secondly, the conservative activist base of the Republican Party doesn't trust Mitt Romney. And with his record of flip-flops over the years, he's just in an unusually poor position to move in any direction other than towards the right. But he, you know, can you win with this sort of strategy? It's mathematically possible, but it's hard. I think Ron Brownstein has estimated that Romney would probably have to win 61% or in the neighborhood of 60% of the white vote to win. That's the level that George Herbert Walker Bush won against Mike Dukakis in 1988, and that was a virtual landslide. So it's going to be tough. But I think the calculation here is that these attacks, bringing back the old welfare queen meme, is kind of a twofer for Romney. It pleases the conservative activist base, which really does have a lurid conspiracy theory sort of view of Barack Obama as the other representative of the underclass and the elites who are trying to, loot virtuous middle-class people. And at the same time, it has a historic appeal to non-college-educated white voters who make up a pretty sizable chunk of the undecided vote. So it's the rare example where they think they can simultaneously move to the right and appeal to swing voters, a very, very specific category of swing voters.
Well, of course, there's a film out now that's paid for by Republican deep pockets. Dinesh D'Souza's film that is designed to, I think, first of all, I mean, it's based on his book, which was made absurd claims about President Obama harboring anti-colonial views. And anybody who knows anything about Obama's father, he was a member of the ruling party, and he was being groomed for a position in the ruling party, and he witnessed a political murder and wouldn't go along with the ruling party, and they hounded him to his death. So if anything, Barack Obama's learned from the fate of his father is that he would not have an affection for an anti-colonial government, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, I don't think the facts are that important to these folks. The whole reason they're going in this direction, this sort of secret theory of Barack Obama, is that by, most reckonings, the man's been a pretty moderate president of the United States, constantly trying until recently to reach out to Republicans, was embracing policy prescriptions to Republicans until very recently were embracing. So you kind of have to come up with a secret theory that he's not who he says he is, not what he appears to be, that he's part of a long-standing, secular socialist plot to expand government, buy votes, and take over the country. It's pretty sad that a significant percentage of the American people buy this stuff, but it's what a big chunk of the base actually believes, which accounts for a lot of the kind of feverish hatred of the man.
Well, that, I think, raises a real question about the United States and about the kind of equal and opposite idiocy that exists both on the right and the left. There's a tendency to gravitate towards conspiracy, both on the right and the left, and it seems, I don't know what the size of constituency is, but it is considerable, and it is...
Well, I don't know. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I don't see a whole lot of conspiracy theories on the left at the moment.
Well, no, this is the 9/11 conspiracy.
Yeah,
there.
I know, but that's a tiny, 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 tiny portion of Democrats that buy into that stuff.
Right. Well, I think
they're always going to be extremists on both sides. Right. I agree.
Right. Well, I guess
what alarms me is how large a segment of the Republican base seems to buy into these kind of lurid theories about Obama, and use it to sort of whip themselves up.
Sure. Well, I think it leads one to speculate about whether or not the Republicans who have been hostile to close down the Department of Education. They seem to be hostile to education, and whether one could make the argument that the Republicans have made a wise investment in ignorance.
Well, it's not so much ignorance as it is their whole separate universe of facts. I put that in air quotes. That's communicated through a sort of closed loop of conservative media, to the point where, the classic example, and you've already mentioned it, are these ads about Obama's welfare policies, which, virtually anybody and everybody who's looked at the facts suggest are outright fabrications. And as somebody who worked on welfare policy in the 1990s, and was actually involved in the effort to enact the 1996 welfare reform legislation, these ads are just a pack of lies. But, you know, conservatives want to believe what they want to believe, and they think it makes sense to them that Barack Obama would secretly try to unravel welfare reform and, you know, just dish out unconditional money to his people. And so they buy it.
Again, I'm speaking with Ed Kilgore, who's a principal writer for the Washington Monthly's Political Animal blog. He's also the managing editor of The Democratic Strategist, an online forum, and a senior fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute. He was formerly vice president for policy at the Democratic Leadership Council, communications director for U.S. Senator Sam Nunn, and a federal state relations staffer for three governors of Georgia. And given that the Republican Party has become a Southern party, as a result of in large part of Lyndon Johnson signing the 1965 Civil Rights Act, at the time Johnson said we're going to lose the South, it's become a Southern party. Do you find it a little odd that this Southern party has a couple of Northerners at the head of its ticket?
Well, I don't think it's a Southern party. You could certainly make the case that a particularly Southern kind of conservatism rules it now. But, I mean, you look at a guy like Scott Walker from Paul Ryan's home state of Wisconsin, and there's nothing Southern about him, but he certainly, you know, has a view of economic development and government management that would be perfectly in place in South Carolina right now. And at the same time, you know, the South, is parts of it are still competitive. I don't think Mitt Romney has ever led a poll of Virginia. So I wouldn't put that kind of regional label on it. I think what's interesting is that the Republican Party has lost its regional diversity entirely. And now you can go just about anywhere in the country with the possible exception of Maine, and Republicans all pretty much embrace the same highly conservative ideology that used to be confined to the South and the West.
So then, to correct the notion it's a Southern party, it's certainly a party that's dominated by Christian evangelicals. Is that a more accurate way to describe it?
Well, I would say that they hold a mortgage on the Republican Party's soul. The Republican Party is not, or its presidential candidates are not allowed to embrace any positions that are hostile to the Christian right. I'm sure they'd be happy with having somebody other than Mitt Romney as their presidential nominee, since most of them do not consider him a Christian. But the important thing is that he's with them on the issues. So no one is allowed to be pro-choice, pro-gay rights, that sort of thing. So, yes, indeed, it's a party in which the whole Tea Party movement, I think, is a grossly misunderstood phenomenon. It's basically just the latest incarnation of the conservative movement, which has been working to dominate the Republican Party since the time of Goldwater. And as I've argued today, you know, I think the convention in Tampa is the sort of event that that the Republicans who nominated Barry Goldwater in 1964 would have recognized and liked. It's a long march of the conservative movement. And the Christian evangelicals and even some libertarians are part of a grand coalition that supports remarkably similar policies.
But this would indicate then that anti-intellectualism is set in stone here, because if you have a party dominated by Christian evangelicals who in many ways are anti-intellectual in their wanting to teach creationism as opposed to evolution, and then you have the influence of the Koch brothers and the powerful oil companies, which essentially own the Republican Party. And it's worth noting, for example, one of the Republican congressmen is now trying to stop the United States Navy from investing in alternative fuels, which is a national security imperative. You know, here we are apparently about to have a war with Iran, and the Gulf is going to be cut off, the oil supply, and the Republicans are now insisting that the Navy give up on its efforts to find alternative forms of fuel. You've got the Koch brothers basically funding this anti-science, anti-climate change. So modern-day Republicans can't admit that climate change is real, and they can't admit that evolution is real.
Well, you know, I mean, it. Frankly, I don't know that it matters that much whether it's avarice driving it or some rather eccentric views about human history that fundamentalists embrace. I mean, part of the problem is that, you know, the business community has abandoned, the large corporate community has abandoned any particular interest they have in sort of social progress. And at the same time, the Christian right has suddenly divinized laissez-faire capitalism. You know, the economic conservatism of the Christian right is pretty remarkable, too. So it's a grand coalition around what they call constitutional conservatism, which involves, you know, a rigid view of government responsibility, absolute property rights, all wrapped up in a package that conservative evangelicals think was literally dictated by God. It's a very powerful belief system we're talking about here, and I'm not sure that every single element of the coalition buys into exactly the same rationales for it, but they do pretty much agree on the same agenda. And it's pretty much what Republicans were advancing in 1964.
Well, just in closing then, Ed Kilgore, I recall recently when Barney Frank retired, he made the remark that, you know, he was retiring because he couldn't stand the nature of gridlock and the polarization, and it didn't recognize the Congress anymore. But he made the remark that the Republicans have essentially become deranged, in as much as they either embrace Michelle Bachmann's kind of crazy rhetoric, or they feel they have to embrace Michelle Bachmann's crazy rhetoric. Otherwise, Michelle Bachmann will run against them in the primary. So what is the explanation for the fact that there's pretty much, as far as I can tell, particularly with Senator Lugar being knocked off by a Tea Party guy recently, I find it hard to find any of this endangered species known as the moderate Republican.
No, they're pretty much gone. I mean, they've been going for quite some time. I mean, what's happened now is that the conservative movement has itself been radicalized over the last few years. And at the very moment that it's finally achieved its long drive to control the Republican Party, so you have a more radical ideological movement now completely controlling one of the two major parties, and that's bound to produce some pretty serious polarization. And keep in mind that this radicalized conservative movement believes in extraordinarily rigid and fixed views of what government ought to do. It doesn't matter whether the economy's good or bad, or really what's going on in the world, it's exactly the same vision they have, which is why they're kind of struggling to make the claim that they're so focused on the economy this year. They'd be promoting exactly the same agenda if the economy was booming. It's an ideological vision, not an agenda attuned to any particular challenges facing the country.
Well, that's a pretty grim prognosis for America in the 21st century, led by Mitt Romney.
Well, the only way you break the fever is to administer a beating or two. There are a lot of historical forces that have produced today's Republican Party. It's not going to go away. But, without any question, if Mitt Romney is president and Republicans manage to control both houses of Congress, the Ryan budget will be implemented almost instantly. And we'll have a very different future for the country.
So just in closing, you're leaving me with a nightmare here, Ed Kilgore. What's going to get the same number of people out in 2008 to vote in 2012? We wouldn't be having a discussion about the race being close if everybody that voted for Obama in 2008 voted in 2012, right?
Probably not. I think the Republican Party is really helping. I mean, the remarkable thing that's happened just in the last few weeks is that the Romney campaign abandoned it's a whole strategy for this presidential campaign. They were going to run it as strictly an economic referendum, on the president, on the performance of the economy during the Obama administration. They were going to treat the president with kid gloves, as a guy that was just sort of in over his head, and just sort of give the light touch to Mitt Romney's personal background. They've abandoned all of that. You know, by putting Paul Ryan on the ticket, they've made it a choice election rather than a referendum election. And certainly they're going savagely after the president now in ways that may appeal to the voters they're trying to appeal to, but could also produce a pretty serious backlash and motivate a lot of 2008 Obama voters, you know, particularly minority voters, to the polls. So I think we're going to have a high turnout election all around.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Ed Kilgore.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Ed Kilgore, who's a principal writer for the Washington Monthly's Political Animal blog. He is also managing editor of The Democratic Strategist, an online forum, and a senior fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute. He was formerly vice president for policy at the Democratic Leadership Council, communications director for U.S. Senator Sam Nunn, and a federal state relations staffer for three governors of Georgia. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about Romney's neoconservative foreign policy team.